A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome to Zone Time. Julian, Avery's here, Sam is here, Omar is back after a one-week hiatus. We have a lot to get to on today's episode. We're going to talk about Jack Campbell and his struggles in Edmonton. We're going to talk about the Ottawa Senators and their struggles just generally. But this is our first crack at talking about Mitchell Miller and the controversial signing that took place on Friday. The Bruins signed him to an entry-level contract. Up until Sunday night, where the Bruins eventually terminated his contract and everything in between. If you are listening to this podcast, there's a good chance you've probably caught up on most, if not all, of the details that have gone on with this. So let's just start with the obvious question here. What was your first reaction? I'll start with you, Omar, since you haven't spoken in a while on the show. What was your first reaction when you saw that Mitchell Miller was signed to an entry-level deal by the Boston Bruins?
I mean, The first reaction is what I tweeted in our group chat is like, we can't get a moment's peace being fans of this freaking league. It always is something. And it's just like, I will never be shocked at the NHL doing something or something happening in the NHL that is harming, alarming, shocking, that unfortunately doesn't go along the lines of inclusion. We've seen many, many examples of this. We've talked about this on Zone Time so many times, and it's unfortunate. But all of the disappointment and the shock and the anger that I had when it initially came out, like when Arizona drafted him and all that stuff came out and they rescinded the pick, like everything came back. And the first question that came to mind was, what changed? What changed? Have we seen anything? Has there been work? Has there been a comment? Has there been anything? And then all of the, cancel culture strikes again. That comment came to mind because it's what we've been saying time and time again. Cancel culture does not exist. Because tell me how someone like Mitchell Miller can do what he did, and can we stop with the whole, he did it when he was 14. Stop it, because that has been completely cleared up. We know all the information, and if you don't know the information, one, you're not paying attention, or two, you're choosing not to pay attention just so it can feed your narrative, so stop it. It wasn't just when he was 14. It was ongoing many years. What's the source? The mother. The mother literally talked about all the things that took place beyond.
And it's been written about by different outlets too.
Written about, covered, so that's gone. So I'm sitting here waiting to see like what work has been done, and all I'm seeing is he still hasn't contacted the family directly. He sent a DM on Instagram. Yeah, that's great. That's awesome. That just absolves everything. That absolves everything. And again, it just confirms what we already know. If you're good at hockey, if you're good at something, you can be, it does not matter. It does not matter. And it's so sad because I thought we learned that what you do off the ice, that the person you are off the ice matters. I thought we learned, but hey, I guess we didn't. I guess we didn't. And especially Boston was, man, it's so hard to hate. It's so hard to hate Boston as a Leafs fan. It's so hard to hate. It's so hard to not hate Boston. But right, what they've been doing this year has been amazing. And they just destroyed that.
They were 10-1.
In a decision that did not need to be made. Did not need to be made. And before people start saying like, you know what? They made the right decision anyway. No. They made the decision because they didn't think people would care. And then people cared. The fans cared. Other fans cared. The players spoke up. And
the players.
So that's the only reason. That's the only reason this whole thing got overturned. That's the only reason.
Not to cut you off here, just in case you have more stuff to say, let's table thoughts on the players' reaction, because I definitely want that to be a discussion topic. But Sam or Avery, do you want to jump on this?
I was going to want to mention the fact that, again, hockey, these teams show, once again, they don't care. Like Omar's point, you can score in the USHL, great, whatever. As a person, have you improved? No, you don't deserve it. Hockey is not your right. People are saying, oh, shouldn't he work again? He deserves the right to work. Go work at Aflac. Geico's hiring. Pro hockey is not your right. It isn't until you do the work. And he hasn't. And again, the whole, he apologized over Instagram. If you want to go bully him in person, but you aren't man enough to go face to face and apologize for your transgressions, I'm sorry. I don't care about your hockey career. You can go flip burgers for all I care.
Yeah, I think Avery raised a really good point, and so did Omar. The notion of, like, the number of people jumping into this to be like, he made a mistake when he was 14. Okay, like, I am not jumping into the mistake thing again. Bullying somebody and racially taunting them over the course of years, and then giving them a push pop that you dragged around a urinal. That is not a mistake. That is something you did intentionally with forethought.
It's horrifying.
Okay, that's actually like, it's super twisted. So stop characterizing that as a mistake. Okay, a mistake is like giving Jay Beagle a 3-year contract for $12 million. This is not a mistake. This is intentional.
During serious times, Jim Benning still gets one.
You can't use the word mistake to cover all of these things. It's like, a mistake is too many men on the ice. You didn't count. You changed shifts late. Like, this is not a mistake. This was a deliberate and malicious decision. And I don't care if he was 14. Like, if you're 14, like, the thought process to put something in a urinal and give it to someone, you know, when you're 14, that's like a screwed up thing to do. That's why he did it. That was the entire point. Like, it's not a mistake. And so for people to say, well, he deserves a second chance. Like, why does he deserve a second chance at being a professional hockey player, which comes with not only a lot of money, but often with a platform for a whole bunch of things. Like, he has done nothing to earn that platform. People are like, well, he went to the USHL. He took responsibility. His coach with the Tri-City Storm had really good things to say about him. Oh, the Tri-City Storm, you mean the organization that name searched itself when they signed him so they could block every single person who criticized the decision without even tagging them. Yeah, I'm sure they taught him a lot of responsibility. There has been no point in this process where he has ever taken responsibility for the things he has done unless it has directly benefited his own career.
But NHL teams will tell you all about how they like character, right? I mean, think about it. Could you imagine if the Boston Bruins went through with that signing of Mitchell Miller, and Mitchell Miller somehow was allowed to play on an NHL team, and then maybe Jim Montgomery, if he was still a head coach, would be like, man, we have a good old room with character guys in there, and you signed a guy who couldn't even bother to apologize to the victim in person and tried to get away with some BS with a stupid Instagram DM to try to absolve himself from everything. And look, it's mind-boggling, it's frustrating, and look, there's going to be a lot more we're going to get into with this. I know there's other stuff we're going to get to in the show.
Sorry, I have one more thing I wanted to
please
say
go that. In Go ahead, go ahead, please. Sorry.
The statement he gave and that the Bruins gave when they first made the signing still had all the hallmarks of like them not grasping how serious it was, because it was like, they used the phrases isolated incident when I was 14. I think he referred to the fact that he was 14 four times in the statement.
Yep.
It is very transparent what the point of making those comments are. And so to me, it doesn't seem at all like they understood what everyone's critiques were.
Yeah, and to my knowledge, at this point, I don't think the Boston Bruins have reached out to the family directly.
As unless something changes, and maybe it's possible by the time the episode comes out, something happens, but at least from the beginning of the process to the end of it, when they terminated Mitchell Miller's contract, they did not reach out to the victim nor the victim's family.
And then they had the goal to write, the decision to sign this young man was made after careful consideration of the facts as we were aware of them. Sure.
And based on new information.
And you know what sucks too is like Don Sweeney is out here talking about, you know, I'm not sure if it's the right move. I'm doubting. He basically saying, you know, I'm not sure if I should do this. Then why are you doing it?
Why did you do it? And literally everyone has had that same, from that same reaction, the same quote that he said, where he said that, literally everyone's reaction has been, then why did you sign him?
They were clearly trying to hedge, right? Like they knew there was risk with making the signing and they knew there would be backlash, but I think they fully did not understand how great the backlash would be. And they thought that by saying like, oh, we were really conflicted and like, it was a hard decision. They thought people would be like, oh, okay, you thought about it.
Mm. Yeah. And also to that point, Sam, I don't know if it has been confirmed or if it will be confirmed afterwards. I do remember people saying that other teams were in on Mitchell Miller. I would love to see that list.
So
I would love to see that list.
Off another podcast that I was on, someone in the know, Chris Johnston, will just put his name out there, was saying that, I don't know. I'm still not convinced personally, even before that, that a whole bunch of other teams were in on him.
I hope not.
And if it seems as if what CJ was telling me on our show, that it didn't seem as if a whole bunch of teams were just kind of in on it either. It seemed as if that, you know, Mitchell Miller was out there and his representation, which we will get to, was trying to, you know, let teams know that Mitchell Miller was out there. And maybe some teams were just like, okay, thanks. Like 3 seconds and that's it. That's the gist of what I'm getting here. I don't know if we'll ever know how many other teams might have been involved if there were others, but clearly Boston felt that they could take a chance on this kid and it blew up spectacularly in their face, as it should have. It doesn't make sense. Honestly. But I will say this. The reactions from Patrice Bergeron and Brad Marchand and Nick Foligno, just generally, you can give praise to as much of the members of the Bruins as you want. That I thought was very surprising to me. Because I'm conditioned to seeing guys come in and players would be like, oh, we'll give him a chance. We'll find a way to make him fit in our locker room. Those guys dug in and said, like, this guy isn't a fit in our locker room. He's going to have to earn being in that locker room. That is the sign of a really good room. I already underestimated the Boston Bruins for how good they're going to be this year. I had no idea what the culture was like until they had to respond to that situation. And I'll give them props for this. The way they handled that, it might be damn near unprecedented for what we're used to seeing from NHL players on that type of stuff.
Absolutely. Like when it comes to like, we've seen it time and time again, the minute you sign that contract and you're called up and you're in that locker room, it's just like, okay, well, you're one of us, you know, freaking what happens in the room stays in the room, all that type of stuff. Like, And also, like, you know, however you want to say it, like, it's also players like directly criticizing a move that management has made on the moral stance of it, you know. And again, like to Julian's point, like, you know, when they're going to start bringing players out and talking about it, I was like, oh God, here we go. We're going to get all these freaking cliches. And then people are going to say, see, it's no big deal. But I was genuinely surprised, like what Nick Foligno said, I was genuinely surprised. It's genuinely surprised that. And I don't know. I don't know if that gives hope or whatever. But yeah, it is one of few times I think that players were very honest for the right reason. And again, I know I'm not gonna, like, you know, praise them for it, because I think that's something that everyone should be doing regardless. But considering the fact that, you know, hockey is what it is, like, yeah, it was. I think it was huge, and I think it definitely factored into how Boston reacted. In the sense of reversing the contract, the fact that not only our fans upset and like media talking about it, but like the key players like Patrice Bergeron, your captain, is saying none of that. So yeah, you have to give it up to them when it comes to that.
You know, we mentioned how hockey culture has to change and has to adapt. You know, that's a step right there.
Absolutely.
Players like that, players with power and influence going on camera and being quite blunt and saying, listen, you are not welcome. You are not welcome in our locker room. You are not going to affect our chemistry, affect our locker room, our key points in wanting to be diverse and inclusive. You do not aid that. And like you said, we need more players like Patrice Bergeron and like other players in that Bruins locker room and Nick Foligno to be vocal about that. Your voice has impact. You play in the highest hockey league in the world. The things you say have impact. So if you're saying he's not welcome, it ripples down to other teams, other leagues. And I don't care what team it was. I would want the exact same thing to come around the players. But what Boston did showed me that, hey, that's what move hockey culture forward. When guys like this are blunt and open and say, this cannot continue. You are not welcome in our dressing room.
Sorry, I'm trying to figure out how to say this. I think that it made a difference that they said that publicly. I will say, I think that I'm not as convinced that those comments were that direct or that blunt. I think they seem direct and blunt and like a pushback against the organization relative to every other hockey player who has ever commented on these kinds of things. And so in that sense, yes, they set a precedent and it is an improvement, but also the bar is on the ground.
That's like, fair.
The bar is under the ground.
100%.
That is the bar is in hell.
So like, yeah, it's great. But even then, like, I think Bergeron said as much as he felt he could say, but it wasn't like we told them no. It was like, I was on the fence, right? Like, it wasn't like this was a bad decision. And to me, the thing that stood out was Cam Neely said that Foligno's and Bergeron's comments on Saturday influenced their decision to cut him on Sunday. So what were their comments before Saturday? Mm-hmm. Like, did the Bruins just never ask them? Did they just discuss as a locker room, but not tell management this is a bad idea? Like, what was the totality of the circumstances there? Like, did he wait until he was sitting down with Elliot to say, oh, actually I was on the fence? Like, I don't actually know what happened there. I think it's good that they gave some pushback, but also, I mean, the thing that I keep coming back to with the Bergeron interview is the timing of it was, it came on Sportsnet right after they announced the signing. When did they film that? There was clearly like, it was clearly pre-planned. The Bruins clearly thought this out and were like, hey, we're going to need him to address this. Like, what is happening here? What was the thought process behind every step of like, we're going to announce this and say it was really hard. Then we're going to put Patrice Bergeron in a boardroom with Elliot Friedman and have this like interview that was framed as like, we were on the fence, but like, yeah, he's going to have to earn his way here. Like, it was all priming the pump for people to be okay with him playing.
Yeah. And unfortunately, I guess to that point, it really does, I guess, bring up the idea that, yeah, you know, players were impactful, definitely, but they didn't think it'd be that bad. They thought people would forget about it. They didn't think people would care.
That's true.
And they probably didn't think that media outlets would contact Isaiah and Isaiah's mother and then have her do follow up, not like sports media, but like, you know, she was like, I think she had
no, kids. I get like that, some, but like, even DMs then, like, stuff. Like, I don't know, man. Like, I like it's her IG is out there. Like, her Twitter, I think she has a Twitter page too. The Victim Swap. Yeah, like it's there, you know. I don't know how a team, a professional hockey team that has all the resources valued at however much money in the world, was not able to do any type of Googling or any type of search or any type of consultation with that side.
If you help the team win games either now or in the future, that's all that matters, and we'll deal with the minutia later. Unfortunately for them, the minutia was a freaking black hole tidal wave that they couldn't deal with. So like, okay, well, frick, if Mitchell Miller is like a 5-year NHL veteran with like 50 point seasons, is he being cut?
No, we might call him Tony D'Angelo.
The other thing that's like mind-blowing is like in the
oh my god, that was the closest, like, oh my god, oh wow, that's
for people who get offended by that, look up Tony D'Angelo's backstory.
That's 1000% true. Oh my, wow, that's so sad. Yeah, that's a thousand. That's so accurate.
Something else that makes this notable too, like, and like, this is a kid who is trying to get into the league and did so much BS as a kid that even Gary Bettman, we didn't even acknowledge the fact that Gary Bettman tried to shut this whole thing down from jump. about that having him. That really surprised me too. You know, the fact that he was like, he's going to take a lot for him to get into the league. But I think it's also fair to wonder, you know, if this kind of came out while he was how many years deep into the league, how would people react to that, right?
Yeah.
That's really interesting to think about how many hoops and how much PR and how much time was put into trying to get him into the league mm-hmm. when so many players of color have just had like mysterious unspecified character issues
mm-hmm.
when they just get kind of like shunted out of the league.
Mm-hmm. Not good in the room, not enough work ethic, an attitude problem. We're trying to build a system here where we hold people accountable. And if you're not part of the program, you're not going to be part of it. And then afterward, you learn the truth and it's like, oh, wow. No, all these things were technically happening. And then years after that, when that's being uncovered, someone's going to write a piece of freaking garbage article about you and then use other people's success as justification. That's not that bad. Steve. Yeah, I said it.
Ooh, and that person's still, and he's still employed. Still employed, but hey, you know, that's for a different day.
There's one other thing about this Bruins thing that I really want to get to. And I know I've had to talk about in other shows. This is the one podcast I want to talk about it because we're in the unique position where we're as diverse as we are. And it's something that we definitely think about. So the fact that we know what we know about Mitchell Miller and diversity and inclusion, that's something Patrice Bergeron's brought up. And people think about that in terms of why would a face like that be in the league? And how does that, you know, affect that line of thinking? And then you discover Eustace King is his agent. Like, Eustace King, for people who don't know, is the only Black player agent in the league. And he represents, unless something has changed since we've recorded, he represents Mitchell Miller. Like, that I think of all of the different twists in all of this, that was the biggest one that made my jaw drop. Like, the fact that Eustace King,
who serves on the league, tell us who else he represents.
Oh, yeah, Wayne Simmonds. Both Smith brothers, Giovanni and Jamel. There's a handful of other clients that he has, and he is a prominent sports agent, and the fact that he's the only Black one in the league and he represents Mitchell Miller, like, look, I don't know how other people felt about it. I felt very bothered by it. I haven't had to deal with him that much. I don't know if I'll ever have to deal with him again as a beat reporter and talking to people's clients and stuff like that, and agents or whatever. I don't know when that's going to happen. But I know I'm bothered by that. That gave me pause. I don't feel great. Like, that made me feel very weird.
Yeah, because I think this whole story is horrifying.
Yeah.
I'm not going to sugarcoat the fact that being Black, it hits a different level. Again, especially when you listen to and know every single thing that was detailed from Isaiah's mom about what Isaiah had to go through. Multiple uses of the N-word, N-word this and N-word that, being all this stuff. So you know the information, and then you see this message from Eustace, from his agent, and I'm going through the message, and I stopped at the end of the first paragraph. Because I had to like stop myself and like I was like, am I being like tricked or punked, or like am I just like in a dream? Because the last sentence of the first paragraph says, at least a portion of it says, I understand the gravity of the situation and respect the fierce emotions and reaction to the initial reporting and commentary around Mr. Miller's past behavior. So if you understand it, then what are we doing here? If you understand it, then what are we doing here? And I guess at the end, you know, he said, you know, it's important to counsel and not cancel. This isn't canceling, man. This isn't canceling. And when you yourself, as a Black person, you said in your comment that you've been around hockey for years, so you should know how difficult and how toxic and how damaging mentally and emotionally, spiritually, it can be to be a Black person in hockey. That for a lot of Black individuals playing hockey, the N-word is a go-to chirp. It's a chirp all the time. So I get it. You're doing your job. Whatever. I'm assuming that that's the main reason for it. But every time something happens, kind of goes around race and abuse that has to do with race, there's always a but. Yeah, this happened, but. And then the afterwards is the justification or the things that's like, oh, it's not that bad or whatever, or things will change. And him having that portion in that statement and having everything else afterwards, my client did all of these racist things. My client abused this kid for no reason of his own, just because he's black or because he's there, whatever. And then, but he's doing this, and that makes it okay. And again, I'm not trying to cancel Mitchell Miller. I don't know Mitchell Miller personally. I don't wish Mitchell Miller harm or whatever. But being a black person in hockey, you need to know the privilege that comes with that. And that for a lot of black people, they don't get that opportunity. They don't get that. Where's the second chance? The Hockey Diversity Alliance is around for that same reason. So it was extremely upsetting to see that statement and see that Eustace look like me, because I didn't understand why the conversation was still happening. And yes, Mitchell should definitely learn on his own and, you know, be a better, bigger person and learn from this. But he doesn't have to do that in the NHL. That is not a right. That isn't anyone's right.
I have nothing to add from the perspective of being black. I think Omar, I think you guys are all obviously better positioned to address the problems with that than I am. What stood out to me, I know Omar said, you know, he gets it, he's doing his job. What I took issue with in the statement beyond what Omar has talked about is he, in the second paragraph of the statement, he says they wouldn't have agreed to represent him without, quote, months of research, deliberation, introspection within our organization, and conversations with outside advisors. And then in the next two paragraphs, he goes on to list the things that he says they learned he had been doing. And he says he was volunteering with organizations such as, and he lists four of them. Then he says, further this summer, Mitchell and I met with and committed to working with the following: Bill Proudman, White Men as Full Diversity Partners, the Carnegie Initiative, and Hockey Equality. He puts this statement out. Okay. If you're doing your job in 2022, you cannot put out a statement like that where within 30 seconds of Googling, people can call bullshit on what you're saying. Because he tweeted that out and immediately people pulled the court records and were like, all of the volunteer work you're referring to was not volunteer work. It was the court mandated community service he had to do. So that's already a huge red flag. Like, what due diligence did you do before you put out this statement if you were characterizing that as volunteer work? Because either you just accepted what he said and you never checked if he was doing volunteer work, or you deliberately characterize his community service as volunteer work. I'm not sure which of those things is worse. Then with the latter ones, you had one of the organization's directors come out and say, yeah, he actually hasn't accepted multiple invitations to come, but we were somehow name dropped. Deeply embarrassing. And then the Carnegie Initiative had to come out and clarify that they were approached, but they had at no point actually worked with him.
Lovely.
I don't know how you put that statement out as an agent and think that people aren't going to go double check what you're saying. It makes no sense to me. And like, why would you name drop organizations like the Carnegie Initiative who are then going to have to be dragged in and address this? It's embarrassing. Like, what was he thinking? Like, what was the point of this? He actually just made it worse.
I'm trying to compose myself and try to bring a good point in terms of what everybody said here so far. And I'll start with the point that Sam made in terms of fact-checking. Everybody and their dog has a smartphone. We can go out and Google it and, you know, verify what someone said in 0.2 seconds. And yeah, you're right, Sam. You brought the Carnegie Institute, which has done great work in terms of trying to move hockey culture forward and diversity. And now you've put their name through the mud. Now they have to respond to something that is not true. And for Eustace, it's disheartening as someone, as all of us, as many of us who are Black in hockey, to see a Black person with power and influence take the side or defend someone as a client like Mitchell Miller, who abused a developmentally challenged Black child. Like, that is so disheartening that he would decide to take this on as the one of the few Black agents in professional hockey. And again, and his name is now going to be brought through the mud. And again, we talk about being Black in hockey, the chances you get as a Black person in hockey, as a player, an agent, a media member, it isn't the same as colleagues who are white. So that is something that I was just so disappointed by. And I hope things change. I hope he sees the error of his ways in doing this, because, and again, no one's canceling. There's no cancel culture is not a thing. I guarantee you someone somewhere down the line, maybe it's not NHL, but some other league will try again with Mitchell Miller in a few months or a year or two. But it's like, it's so disheartening. And this kind of, and this stance to try and rehabilitate someone who was abusive to a Black person who said the N-word, who said, go pick cotton. It's like, what are you doing here? Like, those are words many of us have faced in working in hockey. It's very disappointing and very upsetting.
Yeah, you're representing someone who, again, not only did those things, but to our knowledge to this day, hasn't genuinely and meaningfully apologized and addressed it. And yeah, and Avery, you brought up a point that I didn't even think about, is that, yeah, Eustace King is one of, like, the only black agent.
Unless there's some other name I'm not
thinking. There are a couple more. There are a few more. Croc, you are black agent. There are a couple more.
But it's unfortunate that he's always going to be linked to this now.
Yeah.
Always. It doesn't matter if he stops representing Mitchell Miller. He will always be. Weren't you the... Oh, hockey. You're hockey, the guy hockey doesn't have Miller. Enough. Hockey has a diversity issue. Hockey has an inclusion issue, and it's everyone else's fault. Weren't you the agent that defended the player that, like...
And this isn't a thing in which you wouldn't see as attached ever and ever a man to say Jerry Meehan or Pat Brisson. It's going to be attached to Eustace because he is the most prominent Black agent in hockey.
He is exactly what league or the sport needs more of.
Yeah.
And at the same time is played a role in trying to help someone who was racist against a Black developmentally challenged teenager.
And again, like, for people,
that's the most disappointing. It's the most disappointing part about this for me.
Yeah. For people who think that we're just like, oh, this zone, you know, zone time is just taking an opportunity, taking a shot at people. Like, we don't, especially when it comes to like the racialized people in the sport, it sucks. I hate having to talk about what took place with Evander Kane. I hate that Evander Kane is not a part of the Hockey Diversity Alliance anymore, at least to my knowledge. All of those mini victories that we have, like Quentin Byfield being the highest drafted Black player, Mike Greer being the first Black NHL GM, like those are the stories that we want to focus on when it comes to diversity and inclusion in hockey, and not this, man, not this. It's just, again, like, when are we gonna have a freaking moment's peace? That's the question I have.
I don't know.
On any time soon.
No. I'll say this before we transition over to other topics. The only other thing I'll say is that because of the fact that we're able to point out stuff like this and how wrong it is, and we're not just on this, we're not the only people doing that. And while, yes, to Sam's point, the responses from players could have been a little bit more direct, and it was still very, you know, below the or around the bar, and the bar is very low. This is still a reaction that's still wildly more encouraging than maybe for some other similar story that I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. And again, we've addressed it with hockey culture being broken. Stuff like this is going to happen, and you're probably going to have to endure more of this type of crap before the game gets better. The culture gets better. At least that's how I'm choosing to see it. But there is, this was a very frustrating story. We obviously went through probably the most disappointing part of it for myself. And I think Omar and Avery and maybe even Sam too might feel that way too. We have no choice but to move on and, you know, just hope for the best. And again, as we've done on so many of these episodes, we have to do the awkward pivot and talk about other NHL topics. I think
like 80% of our episodes have needed an awkward pivot.
Yeah. I could probably go through the numbers myself and see, but there's probably more episodes than I would like where we have to, you know, do the very serious thing and discuss a topic very well. I think that segment's one of the best segments we've done in the history of the show. And then we have to pivot to talk about, hey, why do the Ottawa Senators suck when they were supposed to be good?
Like, see, they're trying to sell the team.
See,
look, like, yeah, look, I get it. If we could just do a whole episode, look, if we could just end on what Omar said, that'd be great. Or, you know, if we could talk about funny crap. Nothing makes me laugh more than seeing Omar go off on something that, like, I don't know, the Leafs like burning or whatever. I don't care. Like, I want more of that shit.
I wasn't on last week's episode.
Oh man,
now we talked about that.
We did. If you were on last week's episode, oh my god, Arun. By the way, shout out to Arun Srinivasan. Yeah. Now part of the group chat. By the way, just inside baseball for everybody.
Welcome, member.
He's basically replacing Justin Cuthbert now. He's taking his vacant seat. But anyway, the Senators, they suck. They're supposed to be good.
Senators are bad.
They're last place in the Atlantic Division. Everyone's going to be like, man, the Canadians are going to be there. No, it's not. It's them. They're there. Josh Norris is out for a considerable amount of time. Doesn't look as if he'll need shoulder surgery. He'll be reevaluated in January. And people are wondering if DJ Smith should be on the fired. Actually, I don't know if you guys want to tackle this. There's a quote I want to find from Pierre Dorion about DJ Smith and his about his head coach, because I don't know, to me, when I heard this quote from Pierre Dorion, like, it was very, like, he used his name in the first person. Like, that's how wild the quote is. That's how wild the quote. Like, he said, like, Pierre Dorion is a loyal person. Here's the quote from Jimenez.
Yeah.
Pierre, this is what he said when he was asked about DJ Smith, about all the work that he's done behind the bench. This is Pierre Dorion saying this. Pierre Dorion is very loyal. I think DJ has done a good job. He's shown that he can win. DJ is our coach. He's going to be our coach. Again, when the first line says Pierre Dorion is very loyal, that's not someone saying that. Pierre Dorion referred to himself in the first person and said that.
Is he the rock?
Like, what are you about to say?
that's kind of weird.
Can I just say that before I let everyone get into this, some people will say, you know what, if the team gets worse and they lose more games, maybe Pierre Dorion will have no choice but to actually fire DJ Smith and go back on his word. You see how we all laughed at that quote? If he fires DJ Smith, dude will be memed until eternity for going back on that and also saying in the first person how loyal he is. It might not be on the same wavelength as we're a team, but that's just going to be another quote or meme attached to Pierre Dorion. And I think that matters.
I mean, like, Canadian teams are like, Didn't your boy Kenny Holland Avery do that last year? Saying like, you know, we've been firing too many coaches, so we're not going to do it. And then they fired him. So I don't know, man. I feel like, but that's an Kendrick Ottawa Holland thing. That's an Ottawa thing too. I could have sworn Dorion did it to Guy Boucher. I could have sworn he did it to Guy Boucher. They had confidence in him and then they fired him. I need to find this. I'm pretty sure Dorion did the same thing. Yeah, he said he voiced confidence in Guy Boucher, and then they fired him. And then they had an interim for the rest of the season, and then they hired DJ Smith over the offseason when he left the Leafs. I'm like, I'm so – okay, someone else jump in.
I don't understand how Dorion's been GM for so long.
Yeah.
What a great question.
Dorion's been GM since what, like 20 –
like the 2017-18 season, I think.
Oh, my God.
Something like that. It has to be, right?
He's been around there like quite a bit of time, huh?
Yeah. I mean,
gosh, Yeah, he 2016, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, man, it's been a while. But like it's weird because like when you look at the stats, right? And you know, I know a lot of people don't like the fancy stats, but you know, I like when teams are bad, especially in the beginning of the season, I like looking at fancy stats because it always puts things in perspective. Like, there's mm-hmm. one year where like everyone's saying, like, oh, Winnipeg is so bad, but they're winning games. And then I looked and the Winnipeg Jets, I think it was like 3 years ago, were giving up like the most high danger chances. Connor Hellebuck just snapped. He just like, no, I'm not allowing anything. So when I'm looking, at Ottawa, it's like, they're not that bad. Like they don't give up too many high danger chances. Like they have an even goal differential. So it's like, I don't know. It's very interesting to kind of think about like why. And yeah, they're not like unlucky or anything. Like their PDO is pretty good as well. You know what I think it is?
What?
I think, and this is my opinion, I think that the hockey gods said, hey, Ottawa, have you met my friend Karma?
What?
Because, listen, hold on. Just let me do this, okay?
Okay.
Because a certain thing happened over the offseason, which is huge for Ottawa, right? The Alex DeBrincat trade, right? Rob Chicago was a horrible trade. And as soon as that happened, every Ottawa Senators fan, I shouldn't say all of them, I'd say maybe like 85%, decided to pick up a device, whether it was a phone, a tablet, a Mac, and started tweeting, hey, Leafs fans, we're coming for you. Oh, Leafs fans.
I was waiting for you to make this about the Leafs. I swear to God.
All I'm saying is.
It's not about the Leafs.
Walk before you can run. Okay? Walk before you can run. You know.
Omar, don't do this.
Hey, Omar.
No. And, yes. Yes.
Who is your pick to win the cup this year?
Yo, can we have that like permanently deleted? Like as soon as I said that,
yeah.
As soon as I said that, they had like some moments, and then just like the walls.
Let's just cut in his prediction after walk before you run.
Walk before you run.
That's so true.
You finna tell me that?
That's oh my gosh, that's ooh. So true. But like, ooh. Yeah, man. I mean, like, do you chalk it up to goaltending? Like, because the team in front, I don't think they're being horrible. Granted, the blue line does have some tough things like here or there. And, you know, they saw Nikita Zaitsev. Don't know how we got out of that contract. But, like,
yeah, I don't know.
It could just be, like, the perfect storm. Or maybe they're just not ready yet. You know, it's still a new team. There are a lot of moving pieces. There's still people still trying to figure things out. Right. I think one of the things that they really thought was going to help them this year was the power play. And I don't think the power play has been, like, a crazy difference maker for them. So, I don't know. Maybe it's just a waiting game.
Also, too, maybe. They brought in Cam Talbot net, and he's played two games because he's injured. So that's really hurt them as well, too.
DJ Smith, should he be fired? Yes or no?
I mean, say no.
No.
Here's my fear. And I'm sorry, I have to make about the Leafs again. Here's my fear. Is that they fire DJ Smith and then they hire Barry Trotz.
What?
I would pass out if that happened.
What?
I hope that doesn't happen. I hope that doesn't happen. But that's my fear. Because like if you fire DJ Smith, then who else is out there? Are you like it would make no sense if they fire DJ Smith and they're not like calling Barry Trotz's phone like over and over again. And I don't know if he's taking the full year off or just a half year off, but like you have to have someone pretty decent to like replace them in. So it's just like, but and also DJ Smith, like he has good morale with the players. You know, he's a player's coach. Like they play for him, right? And even though like yeah, the team isn't playing that well. I think like players like Brady Tkachuk is having a pretty good season. I think he has like what like four or five goals right now. And that's, you know, so if he can turn into a 30-goal guy, I don't know, maybe it's just a rough patch. Maybe they turn it around and they win the cup.
Whoa, you're not allowed to switch your cup prediction.
I'm not switching it. I'm just saying the inevitable truth because I chirped them. People are going to isolate that one clip. and be like, oh yeah, see that, went around, you bum, you suck, freaking stupid Leafs fan.
You know what would be amazing? You know, amazing cup final. It's Ottawa and a Western Conference team. Let's just say it's Vegas in the cup final this year. Ottawa, Vegas. Wow. And the CN Tower is lit up in Senators red, white, and black.
Oh, man. That'd be an interesting battle because Mark Stone, right?
That'd be funny.
And if Robin Lehner is healthy enough, too. Yeah, that's a pretty interesting battle. Vegas versus Ottawa.
For who? Interesting
battle. Oh, for the rest of us.
Of course. We don't give a damn about you at this point.
No, it's fine. It's cool.
Omar, I have a question.
Yes.
I have a question.
Sure.
If the Ottawa Senators were to make the Stanley Cup final, would you cheer for them?
No. Listen, I hate that stance. No.
I knew you were going to say that.
If the shoe was on the other foot, they wouldn't cheer for us. And that's a stone cold fact. That's a stone cold Steve Austin 316 fact. No, if the Leafs made the final, it's only Leafs fans cheering for the Leafs. That's it.
Why do we need Canada's team? It's just a stupid concept.
Right.
You can go back to our previous our episode, yeah. I think from like a year or two ago about that.
I mean, the greatest example that of greatest example of that never happening is what Omar suggested. A Toronto Calgary Cup final. Edmontonians would demand a meteorite to hit them if it ever happened. They demand the asteroid to come.
Tell you what, as a Calgarian of almost 2 months, I have no problem with that finals matchup. I'd get to hang out with Omar the whole time, pretty much. Speaking of Edmonton, how's Jack Campbell doing, Avery?
Oh, and it's rough right now. It sure is. It's a tough start. He's got a sub 900 save percentage. The goals against average is Cheech and Chong level numbers. Like,
it is. For those who are not aware, his GAA is 420.
Hey,
he's not wrong when he says that.
No, fun fact: Tommy Chong is Edmontonian.
I did not know that. Yes. I did not know that. Did you guys read that that hockey writer's article that was trying to suggest that maybe the Leafs should get him back?
I'm good. We're good. Listen,
you don't watch
we have enough goaltending freaking theatrics going on.
But like Samsonov's on IR.
Yeah, you know what, Julian? I was having a good day.
I don't feel like any Canadian goaltender is really having a great start.
Yeah, Thatcher.
Yeah.
Mm.
Connor Hellebuyck?
Markstrom?
Markstrom's picking it up.
Yeah.
Mm. He's picking it up, but also the team in front of him is not playing that well.
Yeah.
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 I have to confess, I haven't paid attention to Winnipeg at all, so I don't know about Hellebuyck, but Thatcher Demko does not look like Thatcher Demko.
Sorry to people from Winnipeg and even Ottawa too. I feel like sometimes we should pay attention to them a little bit more on this show. We'll get to them one day. Anyway.
But back to Campbell. Yeah,
not today.
Not today. We already talked about Ottawa.
But like it's remembering Campbell on the Leafs last year, like seeing those quotes, it's just like it's the same thing when it comes to him. A lot of it is this is confidence, and he's so hard on himself, and I think and the contract that he has makes it worse. Like last year he was just, you know, making like 1 point whatever, he was the backup turned starter, at least, or turned starter to an extent, but even though it was still supposed to be like a 10 situation. But like now he signed to a big contract, brought into Edmonton to be the person, and he's not making the saves, and the coach is playing like the kid in front of him on like Hockey Night in Canada and stuff. Now granted, well deserved, he's not been playing well, but like he just needs to find his mojo. He just needs to find it. But it just sucks because Edmonton's at a point now where like the best players look even better somehow. I don't know freaking how, man. Freaking video game looking ass Connor McDavid, so freaking sick. But he just needs some time. And I wouldn't be surprised if it continues if he takes like a break. If they like they give Stuart Skinner like the net, and then they call someone else up and just give him like some time to just like reset, recharge somewhere, because right now, and especially again in a market like Edmonton where hey man, like if you're scoring a whole bunch of goals and they're still going in and McDavid and Draisaitl and, you know, the rest that can only do so much. Like, he has to figure it out. And it's either, do we try to get it to work with the person we literally brought in to do that job? Or do we rely on the kid that some people, Avery included, were saying, hey, just give him the net anyway. So they need to find, some way to rectify this.
Yeah, they're going to have to, though. But Stuart Skinner, he is someone who he's proven that, you know what, he can be the goalie of the future if that is the franchise decision. He's come in now in the eight games he's played. He's played 2.10 goals against average, and he's looked good in what he's played. You know, he's a bigger goaltender. He's battled against high danger chances in a game against Calgary. There were a lot of high danger chances the Flames got, and Skinner stood strong to the challenge. And watching his play develop in junior, in AHL, Bakersfield Condor, and seeing him now, like, his development as an NHL goaltender is beyond impressive. But right now, you know, it's early November. Am I hitting the panic button right now on year one of the 5-year deal in year one of, in November? No, but I do agree that something has to change. It can't continue the way it's going down this road, because Ken Holland and the company did bring in Jack Campbell to be the number one guy. They didn't bring Jack Campbell in to lose his job to Stuart Skinner, who I still like.
Yeah, and he's not making freaking give Stuart Skinner the net money. Like, you have to make it work. Either that, or you got to move him.
Yeah, $25 million contract for 5 years. Yeah, good luck if that guy's not playing all that well.
That's okay, Julian. Did you not know that one time with the Detroit Red Wings, they needed to get rid of a goalie too? That was me. I made that up. That's what Ken Holland does. Like, oh, one time with Detroit.
Guys, what if Kendrick Holland listens to this show one day?
There's no shot.
Please. I hope he does.
I hope he does. I hope Ken Holland does like an amazing trade and says, you know what? I was going to reference something that I did when I was the GM of Detroit, because you know I was the GM of Detroit. But I watched and listened to the show called Zone Time. My perspective changed, and I learned to my core how to be a better GM. So because of that, I'm going to trade Connor McDavid to the Toronto Maple Leafs for a 7th-round pick.
Woo!
Avery, how much do I have to pay you for you to?
How are you going to pay for him?
This show?
I don't know. We'll figure it out.
Yeah, you got to do that.
An IOU? Put him on layaway?
I don't know. in installments.
until the year 2099 at this rate.
Deferred payment. He's talking Bam Bonilla.
Yeah,
until 2099.
Avery, how much do we have to pay you for you to send a YouTube link of this show to Ken Holland?
Oh, that not that much. That would be very funny if
you don't have his phone number.
I do not know. I do not have the phone number of
just one. Burn it on a DVD and slide it underneath his office. You probably have the DVD player.
Yo, I don't know. I'm not that tight with Ken Jamarcus Holland.
That's Jamarcus. Not his name.
There's no way. I was like, there's no shot. That's his middle name.
There's no way.
There's no shot.
All right, Keyshawn.
No. I thought I was wilding when I called him Kendrick Holland. That's actually plausible.
Kendrick Holland
is actually a plausible name. Anyway, I think we've done enough damage. great job this week. We've turned what was a heavy start into the normal hilarity you've come to expect and love on Zone Time. Omar, Avery, Sam, thank you as always for joining.
Can I cut in? I'm so sorry.
Go ahead.
One request, because I know it's going to happen because Sam keeps talking about it. If we are going to release the Leafs are going to make it to the Stanley Cup final clip, can it start with a clip of like Sam saying like, yeah, I agree with Omar, and then it just has that. and then just the reality of like another like round one exit or something. That'd be hilarious.
Sam, I don't know if you want to agree with that, because you're getting lumped into this.
I mean, I think it's funny.
Yeah.
I would just go back and clip like the entire 5 minutes around the original prediction.
Yeah, that'd be funny.
Omar, why would you say something so brave.
Because Julian, I was overcome and swept by the passion. And then for those who aren't aware, the passion is the fuel that rejuvenates Leafs fans.
Stop your shite. It's a crusty VHS tape from the 90s. That's what the passion is.
And he
that's literally what it is.
Listen, okay? Listen. I need to believe in something, and damn it, and they don't do anything this year. Then I don't know what to believe in.
You look like that. You acted like that one meme where that one guy is all sad and despondent, yelling, "Wrestling is real to me, damn it." That's what you look like right now.
Referencing a VHS with Wayne Gretzky in the conference final, sun the Leafs in game 7.
Yo. Tell it.
That
Omar,
that,
were you even alive when Carey Frazier disrespected y'all?
I was, but listen to me, okay? And people keep saying this all the time, so I'm going to set the record straight. It wouldn't matter. Freaking Montreal killed us. Like, I keep saying that all the time. Montreal would have murdered us. You don't not watch Patrick Waugh, man. Come on.
Patrick Waugh was on that year.
Oh, my God. There's no way we would have won that. Yes, it would have been cool, but come on. Stop it. Yes, for sure. Whatever. Freaking high stick, whatever. It wouldn't have changed anything. God, that and the "we have more cups than you" take from Leafs fans always bothers me. We don't. We haven't won a cup since freaking colored freaking printing. God.
I don't know where you were going with colored. I was like, whoa.
Oh, God. No, like printing. Oh, red, black, and white.
Oh, I was about to be like, it was like 1967. That's a precarious time in history. Anyway. Yeah. We had to get those jokes off before we ended the show. Again, for Omar, Avery, Sam, I'm Julian Singh. So long. We'll be back next week with a brand new episode of Zone Time.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.